through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now to kick off the 1 p.m. hour, Danny O'Neill of Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle in the morning, and also fellow glasses wearer.
That's correct.
These ones are fake, though.
Really?
Yeah.
They look quite nice.
Thank you.
I had fake glasses, and then I had to get real glasses.
And then that's,
you know what that's called? Karma. Went through my whole life not having glasses.
I always thought that those were fake, but I never really could.
Mine?
Yes.
Yeah, Curtis knew right away.
Really?
Well, because he has real glasses, and he said those are plastic.
Have you ever heard of blue light glasses?
Yes.
So that's my wife just purchased those like just a little bit ago. Those are blue light glasses?
These are blue light glasses.
Okay. So
they're supposed to screen out all of the things that keep you awake from looking at screens.
Correct.
Yeah, but I still, my screen time is still, I looked at my iPhone screen time, it was 7 hours.
So that probably is very needed
for
you.
Don't give me that face, Danny.
7 hours?
That's a lot of judgment.
Yeah. 7 hours is a lot of time.
I do a lot of work. I work all the time. I listen to podcasts.
How much of that is TikTok?
None of it. I'm too old for TikTok.
I've been addicted to TikTok for about 3 weeks now.
I'm too afraid to
really?
Start
Yeah.
It.
Oh, God. Like, you sit there and lose 45 minutes just like that. Start watching these kids lip syncing.
Yeah.
You realize that there's certain little tropes that are used.
My wife last night was showing me TikToks of people making charcuterie plates for their dogs.
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
Oh, and there's carrots and celery and dog food. I was, what are they doing?
Actually, I have a playlist on Spotify right now called TikTok Bangers.
Really?
Whoa.
Yeah. That's correct.
We'll bleep that.
We got Dej Loaf Backup is on there, as well as Skin Bone 100 Miles. Yeah.
Is that the one that you were playing all morning?
Yes.
Kill you.
Yeah, that's correct.
Danny, let's get to stuff that doesn't matter nearly as much as this. We've been talking really all week, kind of finalizing our own blueprint for the Seahawks offseason. What do the Seahawks need to do to get back to a Super Bowl? That's the question that we're looking to ask. So each of us have our own individual kind of plan for it with kind of our big three priorities. Now, all of us, me, Tom, and Jake, kind of agreed that pass rush is number one, but then we all kind of differ in two, three. What's
eventually,
your top...
they'll all conform, Danny. That's my goal.
No,
eventually,
no.
they will all conform.
Differences are fun. What is your three priorities of the Seahawks? If the Seahawks are going to get to a Super Bowl in 2020/21, they need this.
Pass rush is the first part.
Okay.
Can I, young defensive players,
yeah.
Does that work?
Yes, it
yeah,
does.
Absolutely.
Outside of the pass rusher, I really would spend, and this is, I want to say that this is, I'm working within the constraints of what I realistically expect. Mm. I don't expect the Seahawks to change their offensive template.
But can they get back to a Super Bowl if they don't?
Yes, I think they can. You look at how they were playing this past season.
You just have to answer the question, and if the answer is yes, then that's okay.
Yeah, I think they can. Big picture, I'm intrigued, and Jake was the first person that I heard bring it up, of the idea of following New England's path of about 10 years into Tom Brady's career, and it was actually like 7 or 8 years, pretty much the same point Russell is. They made a pivot where it started being a more pass-oriented offense, and that coincided with them getting Randy Moss, which I think was a unique opportunity for them. I'm intrigued by that. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't know if Pete at this point in his career is going to make that change, but I would say... The needs, pass rush is the first one. And I think you have a really important question, which is, are you going to give Jadeveon Clowney the contract you wouldn't give Frank Clark? Mm. Is Clowney a better player? Like, will you do that? Or is Seattle going to look at it, which is very possible, and say, hey, for $22 million a year, I'd rather get two players than one, and go out and sign two different guys. They need to add the pass rush. I would say that you want to add one cornerback and maybe a veteran if it's somebody like Chris Harris. Or maybe it's somebody in the draft. You need to add a starting caliber cornerback. Even if that guy doesn't end up starting or is your nickel corner, you need to add a cornerback. And then just general speed on defense. If they brought back the same offense, I would be totally fine with that. I don't really care about them improving the offensive line. I think the offensive line is fine. I think they could use another receiver or two.
Wait, would you be fine with them then keeping the offensive linemen they have? Because three of those guys, if you include George Fant as an extra tackle, are free agents.
Yeah, I don't really care.
Okay.
Fant, of the three guys that are free agents, Fant is the one that I'd most like to have back.
Okay.
Jermaine Ifedi is the one that I consider most likely to be gone.
Yeah.
And just patch that. I like some of the young guys, Phil Haynes, Jamarco Jones. I think you're going to have some opportunities and some growth within. Dwayne Brown should be back. There might be a little bit of a question about Justin Britt. It's a pretty high cap number.
Don't you imagine that if he stays, it's got to be restructured? I just can't imagine that the Seahawks, and I love Britt. I love the leadership he brings, and ultimately I love the player, but he's getting paid as a top five center in this league right now, and the production hasn't been up to that standard. And so you're looking at an $11 million cap hit. I mean, that's a massive number that I just can't imagine that the Seahawks are just going to let that go by just because they want to keep him. I mean, there's got to be a negotiation there, I would imagine, because if they cut him, it's not like Britt is going to be able to go out and replicate that type of money somewhere else coming off the injury that he has.
You're right. It's very seldom, though, that they take that approach with veterans. Usually when they decide to turn the page, they fully turn the page.
Hmm.
They don't redo deals, right?
Yeah.
For the most part that they have. I have a hard time seeing them paying him $11 million against the cap next season. I also have a hard time seeing them going into a season with Joey Hunt as your starting center.
Yeah.
And yeah, he played and he's really tough and he's smart and there are going to be two or three plays a game where he gets manhandled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that's going to happen just because of his size. So I would say of all the offensive linemen, Britt is the one that's the biggest uncertainty because I don't know which way the team's going to end up going. I think Fant is the most important of the three potential free agents to resign. I don't have much expectation that Jermaine Ifedi's back.
It's interesting because you look at it and that right there is saying, look, with the patchwork of the offensive line and the willingness to allow potential growth there with, because Jamarco Jones and Phil Haynes, they're unknowns. I mean, we've seen Jamarco Jones in limited action in the interior, but he played relatively well. But you don't know what that full season is going to look like. But you're saying that throughout Russell's career, in his eight seasons as a pro, he's been able to do a lot with less. And that's still going to be somewhat of the same approach on the offensive line. But now and they were able to put something together pretty good last year. But the defense has to be addressed. And Danny, my question to you is, I've heard this. I've heard Brock say it as well in terms of speed, and I don't disagree. But much along that same conversation with Justin Britt, do you think that this team would move on from KJ Wright? Do you think they're going to move on from, you know, Trey Flowers and essentially give up on him is what would end up happening? Bradley McDougal, Marquise Blair, because to add that speed, you're going to have to replace those players. And if that's the case, I'm on board for getting more speed. But I also see them going, you know what, those guys, we believe that we can get another year out of them.
I love KJ Wright as a player, and I thought Michael Kendricks was pretty good. I don't think both of those guys can't be back next season. And I would actually, I think there's a tough question there. I think you might be better off having Bobby Wagner and having a couple of young guys that run around. Look, I don't know when this team stopped playing young guys, especially on defense, or mm-hmm. decided to stop playing young guys. I'm not sure why that happened, but at some point, that has to be the route that you go because older guys are expensive. And then
KJ would save you $7 million on the cap.
And older guys, you tend to have injury liabilities. KJ had a great year last year, and it was much better than I thought it was. I wondered if he would hold up, and he did. And if he comes back, I think Pete has a pretty accurate assessment of what he gets from his linebackers. But if he comes back, you've got to find somewhere else to get faster players on there, if only because of this. This used to be a team that made its reputation by finishing great.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were a good team September through November, and they became a great team in December. They've now become a team that's great for the first 3 months of the season and declines to being good in December. And I think that we've seen that in the fact that the three best playoff runs have come in the first half of Pete's decade-long tenure. They've got enough to get into the playoffs. They've got enough to win a playoff game, but we see that it's...
sputters.
It sputters, and it's not that they're kind of outmatched early in the divisional round of the playoffs, that there's this sort of feeling of, okay, you're good enough to get in the playoffs, but you're not one of the four best teams in the league. Like,
right.
That's not happening. I think how you get there is you get more young guys and have a defense that plays with some reckless. I think you can make a lot of things happen by having a lot of young guys on the field and throwing it around, and hey, there's going to be some mistakes made, but it's defense.
Mm-hmm.
LJ Collier didn't play. Marquise Blair was limited by injuries and he didn't play. Like all of those, and then Ugo Amadi wasn't your slot for the whole season. Right. Why wasn't that?
Blair and Ugo Amadi, that whole situation still befuddles me and angers me, quite honestly, because of the same idea of what you're talking about, the same principle, the talent, the speed, the playmaking ability, it was there. And they showed it when they were on the field, yet there was a lack of willingness to put those guys out there because of the concept of afraid of getting beat over the top or giving up big plays.
Let's play guys younger. Let's play young guys earlier. And maybe if that happens, Ugo Amadi doesn't give that up to Davante Adams at the end. Like, honestly, on that third, if he gets a little more experience, let's go. Let's get some young guys. Let them learn on the job a little bit and suffer with it, but you'll be better for it at the end.
He is Danny O'Neill. Listen to him and Paul Gallant with Danny and Gallant every single morning on 710 ESPN Seattle. Danny, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to talk to you guys, and it's great to see you both.
Love it.
If you're watching the stream on 710sports.com, you can see Howdy and Kyle making fun of me. It's fine.
Regularly, it's just every day.
It's a daily occurrence. The other day, Brenna thought that she made fun of my hair on accident.
Who's Brenna?
Brenna.
I was just saying for our listeners.
My friend.
Brenna, the engineer. Brenna, the engineer. Fantastically talented
engineer.
She's
wonderful.
Here.
She thought that she was making fun of me because of some kind of joke that I made, and you guys all started laughing at it. And Jake said, "It's okay. It's not worse than anything we say to her." And that's true.
Stacy said to Brenna, "Oh, man, that's too bad. I was having a great hair day." And then Brenna said, "Oh, what happened?" Because, like, you had said it in the past tense. I was having.
Yeah.
I was glad you replied.
It's fine.
Yeah, it was bad. But then, you know, Brenna came up to you today and complimented you.
She said,
"I am
having a great hair day."
Yeah. So, you know,
so
building you up.
Thank
building you.
You
up.
I washed it.
Good.
I washed it.
Good.
You know what?
It was Thursday. So we got
to
watch.
What I notice about every single person that we talk to about the off-season plan is I have yet to talk to a single person at this station or on our text line or one of the callers that we took earlier this week who doesn't say that pass rush is the number one thing.
It's
not a single person.
No.
If you don't think it's pass rush, text into the Coors Light text line 710-710 because there's no way it can't be that.
Text into the 710-710 Coors Like text line, just so that we can tell you you're wrong.
Yeah.
Right? That's basically what Stacey's saying.
You're
here
setting
in this
yourself
situation.
Up for failure.
Right.
I want you
step
to know
into
that.
The trap.
When you text in, I will make fun of you. I will text back, but you're going to be wrong.
That's right. To me, there isn't one thing that couldn't be more clear in any offseason than the Seahawks and their defensive line in terms of pass rush and just bolstering their defensive line in general. And that's where, you know, yesterday kind of Brady Henderson brought up the premise of signing Clowney doesn't allow you to sign another defensive end. And that's completely wrong. You can absolutely sign another defensive end, but in the terms of what Brady was bringing up is, okay, you can sign two guys for $15 million like the Packers did, and now you're getting two pretty good elite, you know, pass rushers for $30 million when just signing Clowney alone is going to get you 20, you know, is going to make you around a $20 million cap hit. So that part of it I understand, but they're going to make the investment on the pass rush. They absolutely have to.
253 says, need quarterback help. Stop it. You don't mean that. 360 says, cornerback is key. I'll allow it, but I disagree that that's the number one. Another 360 says, secondary, fine. 253 says it's not the pass rush, it's the QB. Get out of here. You don't mean what you're saying.
And one just clearly just trying to egg me on here.
Kyle, this is you. You can't tell me this isn't
clearly
you.
Clearly we need to upgrade at QB since Russ isn't clutch.
253
get out of here.
Says we need to trade Russ for Minshew. Kyle,
hey.
Are you texting from the control room right now? You can't
do you really
tell
think I'm
not.
From the 253?
Never.
Give me a break. I would never
Gross.
Rest
whoa.
The 253.
Whoa.
Let's
You're
going
to run into some problems over here with me and C-Rod.
Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
253. Danny says Pete has gone away from playing young players. Why is that, and what does that mean for free agency?
I really just think at this point in time for the Seahawks and for Pete Carroll and that staff, as they were looking into 2019, they looked at their roster and said, look, we just don't have it this year. We don't have the pass rush that we were hoping to have, and we're also looking at it saying, because of that, we don't want to get beat over the top because we just don't have the talent across the board in all three levels to be able to play our traditional man and cover three match type of zone that we have played for so long. So we're going to play a too high shell. We're going to keep everything in front of us, and we're going to be very conservative on that side of the ball. And part of being conservative is saying as well that we are going to keep guys out there that we trust and we feel comfortable with. Marquise Blair didn't fit the bill. Ugo Amadi didn't fit the bill as rookies out there. And I think that probably holding on to that philosophy was a mistake overall, especially at midway through the season. You have to be able to be willing to play your young players and get them out there, especially when they add speed, when they add playmaking ability like we saw from those two guys. And it'll be interesting to see what the Seahawks end up doing in the offseason or in philosophically if they get back to that mantra that helped them be so successful early on.
Second down. Outside of Jadeveon Clowney, is there another free agent you'd like to see the Seahawks sign?
Really, I when I look at the other free agents that I would love to see signed, obviously the names come up on the edge rushers. I look at Yannick Ngakoue from the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think he would be great, but again, another guy who's going to be very expensive. You can go down the list. Shaq Barrett, to me, is a guy that I think is very talented. He's twitchy, but I don't think that he's going to be a guy who's going to replicate the same numbers of sacks that he did last year at 19 and a half. So I think that one is kind of a buyer beware situation. Still a very good football player, but don't have the expectations that he's going to produce almost 20 sacks. Dante Fowler Jr., Matthew Judon from Baltimore Ravens. The one guy that I really like is Robert Quinn. Robert Quinn, to me, is a guy that I really, really like. He was number one over Jadeveon Clowney in pressure rates and is a proven commodity. He was a great player for a long time, and I think that he still has the juice to be able to get it done. And one other wish list is I would love to see them sign Joe Thuney from the New England Patriots. He's regarded as one of the best offensive pass blockers in this free agent list, and I think that shoring that up from the interior next to Dwayne Brown and potentially Justin Britt, I think that you would capture a really good left side of your offensive line.
How do you feel about Amari Cooper from the 360?
Amari Cooper, to me, is just he's too much money at a position that you already feel pretty good about. I would love to have Amari Cooper. There's no doubt about that, but I think A.J. Green makes more sense for this offense. He's going to be a little bit less, but also I think guys like Randall Cobb in the role that they could play would make more sense to this group than necessarily Amari Cooper. And also, you got to remember, this is a tremendous draft in terms of depth at the receiver position, and I would anticipate if they don't go for A.J. Green or Randall Cobb that they will probably look to the draft for a young, talented receiver like they did last year with DK Metcalf.
Third down. Jake, how realistic is it that the Rams could actually trade Todd Gurley?
They're going to absolutely shop him around and see what they can get out of him. Realistically, I don't think that it is something that anybody's going to be willing to take on because, once again, the talent is there, but everybody has questions about his health.
Is that why they shop him around?
His durability? Absolutely. And also because it's a tremendous cap hit to them. They're not getting the same production for the amount of money that they are paying. And for the Los Angeles Rams, you have to be able to get younger. You have to be able to continue to find equity in terms of cap space and potential draft capital because you just don't have it at this point. So you are stuck in your situation and with very little room to improve your roster over the next two seasons. And so allowing, alleviating some space in that cap could really greatly help the Rams if they wanted to go that route.
This is kind of a part B to this question. Is it that he has an arthritic knee? What's the deal with Gurley? Just a chronic knee injury?
It's a chronic knee injury. So, yeah, I think people would look at it and say it's an arthritic knee injury. But the thing is, we don't really have the specifics on what exactly it is. But I would assume that it would probably be a chronic arthritic type of injury where it just continues to flare up. So a load management program is necessary for Todd Gurley. And that's the part where if you're paying him $14 million and he's a tremendous cap hit to your organization, a guy in a load management program is not worth that kind of cap.
Fourth down.
Stacy.
Me.
Should Seahawks fans already be concerned that Jadeveon Clowney hasn't been re-signed? When can they get him back?
No. Well, the answer to the first one is no. not just the whole question.
When the new league year begins.
Yeah, when the new league year begins. So all player contracts expire on March 18th. That's the start of free agency this year. It's the start of the new league year. So I know the playoffs are over, but players that are going to be unrestricted free agents are still under contract. There's this added layer of, not difficulty, but there's just another layer with Jadeveon Clowney, because technically he did play as a franchise tagged player this year. So when you franchise tag a player, and that opening for that for the Seahawks to franchise tag a player would be in February or any team. But when you franchise tag a player, you have until kind of mid-July to reach an agreement on a long-term deal with that player. Once that deadline has passed, that player is playing under a franchise tag, point period blank. You cannot create a long-term deal until the expiration of that contract. So you should not be concerned that the Seahawks have not re-signed or agreed to a new deal with Clowney. It's also not at all unusual that a top-tier free agent, even if Clowney wasn't a franchise tag player, that a top-tier free agent like Clowney would want to explore the market a little bit. So I wouldn't even expect the Seahawks to reach a deal with him on March 16th when the legal tampering period begins, or on March 18th when free agency officially starts. I wouldn't be shocked, and Jake, I think you'd agree with me here, if he tests the market to begin with.
I really honestly think that Clowney isn't going to sign until after a week when that free agent market period hits, because it's about visiting other teams. It's about seeing their plan. It's about seeing what the other moves are going to be in, particularly for the Seattle Seahawks. So how quickly those moves are made by the Seahawks and what they're able to show Clowney, I think, is going to be key. And then also Clowney leveraging the situation and knowing that there is going to probably be a buyer's market for him, and saying, or in a seller's market, saying that, look, my stock is going to continue to rise, and knowing that once you get a couple offers, now you can try and leverage the situation with the Seahawks. But Clowney's got to be careful. If he really wants to play in Seattle, playing that type of game with the Seahawks is not going to go well for him, because just like they did with Frank Clark, once they get past that threshold of what they feel comfortable with, they are going to walk away.
Yep.
No ifs, and buts about it. And so it's really determining based off of what the Seahawks really do feel comfortable spending Clowney. They know they're going to have to spend in that $20 million range. Where is the cutoff point for them?
And I wouldn't be surprised also, and wouldn't see it as indicative of them not signing Clowney, if they first, before re-signing Clowney, signed another defensive end. A, they need extra pass rush help. B, Jake, you pointed out, this was actually in a meeting that we were having off air, just talking hypothetically about free agency, that it might help them in their bargaining for Clowney if they say, hey, we also added this guy.
Absolutely.
And he's going to be really good, and he's going to help take some of that pressure and some of that attention off of you so that you can rack up those numbers this year. So if they sign another free agent ahead of Clowney, don't read that as that being the replacement for Clowney. It could just be a step in them kind of, you know, bettering that pass rush as a whole. All right, we got the halftime show next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
We open today's show talking about our off-season blueprint. All off-season, we are going to be looking to answer the same question. One question: how do the Seahawks get to a Super Bowl in 2020? Obviously, the Super Bowl will be in 2021. I'm talking about the 2020 season. This season, how did the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl? We've gone over kind of our biggest priorities. We listed five of them. We're going to read them off. Number one, pass rush. All three of us are in agreement here. Number two, offensive line.
And that's the part with offensive line. You got two different strategies. Is you're going to go out and invest in the offensive line in a major way. You're going to surround Russell Wilson with protection, or simply, you've got to come up with a plan. You have to solidify this group, even if it is, you know, doing some patchwork here. You got a ton of holes. Basically, you know, three of your five offensive linemen are question marks. They're guys that are leaving into free agency. Guys that you need to retain, and even you can save four in there, because Justin Britt is a definite potential cap casualty. So there's a lot of questions there.
Number three, weapons around Russell Wilson. Now, obviously, we saw what the offense looks like with the addition of a guy like DK Metcalf. After the Super Bowl, we were talking about, would you rather have move the chains guy like tight end Travis Kelce or George Kittle for the 49ers? Or would you rather have a speed guy like Tyreek Hill? I think I settled on a speed guy like Tyreek Hill.
You did. So they are going to have to upgrade it at their third receiver position and also their tight end position as well as they head into next year. So that's going to be a big key for this offense.
We also had philosophy and scheme. Now, when we talk about these offseason changes, and again, that all starts on Monday when we have the first of our Seahawks free agent profiles. That'll be at 2 p.m. Anytime we do these daily profiles, it'll be at 2 p.m. So listen back for that. If you aren't able to catch it in real time, it'll be on 710sports.com on the podcast page. When we talk about the changes the Seahawks need to make to get back to a Super Bowl, or maybe once they don't, we're not just looking at personnel, player additions. We're also looking at, can their philosophy work for them? I don't think it's going to change. Can they get back to a Super Bowl if they stick with the same philosophy? Maybe.
For me, offensively, it's about evolving, right? It's not making wholesale changes, but it's evolving what you're already doing and doing it better than it's ever been done before. And I think under year three with Brian Schottenheimer, you've had 2 years of them, of evidence showing that they can run the football, that Russell Wilson has been playing some of his best ball to date, and that in 2019 they made a jump. They started using Russell Wilson more. I think they can make another jump in 2020. So it's not wholesale change, but continuing to evolve on offense. And really, defensively, it's about being aggressive again. It's getting back to that mindset of we're going to be more physical. We are going to make things difficult on you at every single level, and we're not going to give an offense room to breathe, especially receivers and quarterbacks, time to sit back there and feel comfortable. And I think that has a lot to do with scheme and playing cover one and cover three and getting away from that too high look in their cover two schemes. I just don't think it fit them very well.
And finally, number five on our list of priorities for our offseason blueprint is team speed. That could be a couple things. It doesn't just mean, oh, you need to get a fast wide receiver like Tyreek Hill. First of all, that's hard to find. I don't know where you just find a receiver like Tyreek Hill. But it could mean maybe I want to see more speed in the secondary. I wouldn't mind seeing them add a veteran cornerback, or I wouldn't mind seeing a healthy Quandre Diggs back there at a really fast kind of free safety position. It could be, you know, more speed in the pass rush. It could be, you know, a quicker kind of up-tempo offense. Maybe you felt like that's where they succeeded. But team speed is what we settled on for priority number five.
And also, we're talking about decisions of linebacker, KJ Wright. Trey Flowers, getting guys in those positions where you're adding more playmaking ability, you're adding more speed, and that's the difficult question in this, because KJ Wright, to me, I love this individual. I love him as a teammate. I love him on the field, and I think he had a great year bouncing back. It's those questions that front office is trying to make. Do they think KJ Wright can continue to play at that level and continue to produce while they're making that defensive line better? Will that help Bobby and KJ be even better coming in 2020? That's a question that's going to be out there.
Next up, the Sports Star of the Year Awards were last night. Mike Salk was there. He stopped in at 12:30 and 12:45 to fill us in on all the awards. The Seattle Sounders took home the Sports Story of the Year. Angie Mentink won for the, what's the name of the award? For the broadcaster? Keith Jackson Award.
Keith Jackson, yes. Coming out of Pullman, Washington.
John and Tracy Schneider won the Paul G. Allen Award for their philanthropy, especially with the Benz Fund kind of charity event that they put on every single year and their ongoing charity there. That was...
They voted the top story of the year was the Sounders winning the MLS
Cup.
Yes,
that was the top story.
But
they
for
took
us,
it.
The top story of the night was that Salk found out that Stacy has been telling all her friends that Mike is a very, very old, decrepit man.
That's not what happened.
Allegedly.
No, what happened was my friend was also at this event. I was not there. She was there for work, and she ran into Mike, who knows her coworker, and she said, oh my gosh, you're Mike Salk. And he said, yes, I am. And she said, you work with my roommate, Stacy. And he said, yes, I do. And she said, you're not as old as I thought you were.
You're not as old as Stacy always says you
are. No, that's not what I said.
Allegedly.
No, that wasn't what, no. Well,
no, I thought you'd have so many more wrinkles.
She did literally say that, but it wasn't because I had been saying anything. It wasn't me spreading rumors. It was just, she just thought he was older.
Saul cracks me up in terms of his thought process in that. At first, he was like, oh, what a great compliment. I'm 42 years old.
Yeah.
I look younger than I am. That's awesome. He's like,
wait a second.
Stacy's talking about me like I'm this old, crutchety guy. What are we, what?
All right.
Come on, Stacy, you got to be better.
Next up. Danny O'Neill joined us at 1 p.m. to talk about his own blueprint for the Seahawks, what his answers to those questions would be. One of the more interesting things that he said was that he feels like the Seahawks stopped improving in December, that the Seahawks' best runs in the postseason were in the first half of Carroll's decade-long tenure in Seattle. And since then, they've kind of sputtered at the, not just the second half of Carroll's tenure, but in the second half of the season. They used to be one of the best teams in December and in January. Now it feels like they just kind of fall back into the playoffs, was kind of the way he was looking at it. Not only that, but when they've gone to the playoffs, it's felt to him like they've been outmatched.
And I would definitely agree with that statement. You know, it's hard to look at it and say that this roster has so talented that they beat themselves. I mean, the story was going into this, man, look at this team. Look at how they're just overcoming adversity. How are they getting this done? How are they able to win so many close games and overcome this point differential? Those are legitimate things that you can point to and say, that roster just wasn't as talented as it needed to be to win the Super Bowl. You can point to the health of the, you know, key injuries on offense, you know, limiting them. But still, it would have been even difficult at that point had the offense been truly been healthy all the way around. And Russell Wilson showing that he is one of the best players in the NFL, one of the most clutch players in the NFL, Gil Brandt, yes, I'm talking to you, and a tremendous job of leading this team between him, Bobby Wagner, and the rest of the veteran group.
Last up, Brent Stecker has a column up on 710sports.com explaining why the Mariners are a potential landing spot for Taiwan Walker. He said Walker pitched in a total of one inning last year after Tommy John surgery, didn't pitch in the minors, did fine, got up to 94 miles per hour. He was non-tendered by the Diamondbacks, is a free agent, had a bullpen session in front of 20 scouts this week, and it's been reported that the Mariners have an offer on the table, and it's basically just seeing if someone else beats their deal or not. He explains in the column why the Mariners have one thing over other teams when it comes to this potential deal. So go to 710sports.com to read about that. The timeline is next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Welcome back to Tom, Jake, and Stacy. The injury report is brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. As a reminder, James Paxton out 4 months. That was surgery for what?
Cyst removal on his back.
Oh, it's just
bad for him.
Poor James Paxton.
Yeah, poor guy. I mean, look, he's off with the Yankees, but he was a guy here who was, by all marks, very easy to work with from a media standpoint, was a good guy in the clubhouse, and was a talented player, and he's just one of those guys that, unfortunately, injuries follow him and plague him, and there's been far too many players that I've personally been around who have had the same issue.
Were they all Canadian?
No, they were not all Canadian.
You hate to go to
the Canadian
thing.
Most of them were from the U.S.
Well, I mean, who else? What other Mariner famously kind of had these injury setbacks was Michael Saunders.
Well, then you look at Luke Wilson, who was able to, like, come back from any. He is a remarkable healer, Pete Carroll.
Good point.
Remarkable healer.
Spent a lot of time in the U.S., though. I mean, Luke Wilson.
Are you saying
he was in the Houston area, went to Rice University.
Plays American football.
Being in the U.S. is what makes him a quick healer.
I'm just trying to.
Took the Canadian out of him.
I'm just trying to figure it out because, you know,
Jake.
The dots are just not adding up when you throw Luke Wilson in there.
Let's get back to the rest of the timeline. Bob, Dave, and Moore are trying to figure out why people want Russ to cook.
We've talked about this before. I don't think any of us are going, hey, he needs to throw the ball more often. To me, it's about...
But isn't that what the cooking people want?
I don't care.
Best part about this is knowing they're in the next room.
What's going on with the cooking people?
Isn't that what the cooking people want? And then Bob...
But isn't that what the cooking people want?
I don't care.
Bob's saying I don't care.
I do not care.
I don't care.
I don't care what those cooking people or what those kids want.
A show with just me and Bob would just be the mean show. That's what it'd be called, because it'd be me and Bob. Like, people just tell us things, and we go, I don't care.
This is where there's this generation gap. This is like, you guys probably have gone through this. You're trying to explain, like, TikTok or something to your parents. You're like, no, Mom. That's not what it is. Like, no, you just don't get it. I just...
But isn't that what the cooking people want?
I don't care.
No, that's not... The cooking people are something else. That's not the same thing.
No!
You don't have to do the pre-snap motion all the time, do you, Dave?
I'm sorry, who was that?
Warren Sharp.
That's Warren Sharp. Okay, and what does he do?
He's one of the...
he runs Sharp football.
Yeah, he's one of the sabermetrician style.
You know what's funny? If you were to ask, like, coaches that have actually coached football teams... And they would be much more humble about it.
Dave Wyman insults people the way Mariah Carey insults people.
I'm sorry, who was that?
Mariah
just doesn't even acknowledge
him. Was it Christina Aguilera?
No, I don't know her.
Yeah, someone asked Mariah Carey about a very well known artist.
I think it was Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston.
I'm sorry, who was that?
I don't know her. I'm sorry, I don't know her.
That is ridiculous. To me, Dave Wyman, I think, shares the same sentiment that actually Stacey and I really don't like in terms of, you know, look, there are difference of opinions in terms of the coaching crowd, the former football players or current football players about how they view the game and the analytics crowd. And I think that that's something that I've always said that there has to be a meet in the middle and that there's validating points on both sides. But a guy like Warren Sharp goes out of his way on social media every single week to basically flex his muscle and show just how right he is and how dumb and wrong everybody else is.
I'm going
to
get
That's the mode that he really tries to portray. He's gone after players. He's gone after different people. And I think, you know, with Dave Wyman, I understand. Like, it rubs you the wrong way, and it's frustrating at times.
Dave Wyman has always been someone who feels like it's better to simplify football and be honest about football and not try to make it seem like you know more than someone else. I don't know that that's what Warren Sharp is trying to do. I actually like a lot of Warren Sharp's stuff, and I'm using him more as an example here rather than as like a personal trait that he has. But I will be honest with what I'm about to say. I think sometimes I love, I don't want to say analytics Twitter. I do love reading about analytics. I love I love the way that football is evolving and we're changing the way that we look at it. I love it. But as someone who I don't know how else to say this other than 80% of the time, the stereotype that someone places on me is that I'm an idiot. And I'm not. I think I'm a really smart person. Not the smartest person ever, but I think I'm a nice person. I'm a smart person. I try to learn new things, and I try to hear different viewpoints, as you do and most people here do. And I think that sometimes there's a tone that can be ostracizing and that can make you feel excluded. And in an avenue where you already feel a little bit excluded, it sucks to receive that kind of tone. And if you're trying to bring in people, again, this isn't about Warren Sharp. He was just the launching point. If you're trying to bring in sports fans and have them find new and exciting ways to talk about sports, I think that making people feel like you think they're stupid is really awful.
What it does is it puts guards up, right? It put walls up instead of saying, hey, let's learn together and let's grow together. Here's what the saber metrics are saying. Here's what the analytics is pointing to in these situations and how we can grow together as fans. Instead, it's here's what the metrics are saying. These guys aren't using it. They're wrong. I'm right. And now you get into this, you know, serious debate. So now this is the part where it gets interesting. Can we play that sound one more time of Bob? Because I love what Bob, he's trying to say saber metrics, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what he says.
I think so.
You don't have to do the pre-snap motion all the time, do you, Dave?
I'm sorry, who was that?
Warren
That's
Sharp.
Warren Sharp.
Okay, and what does he do?
He's one of the...
he runs Sharp football.
Yeah, he's one of the sabermetrician style.
You know what's funny?
Sabermetrician.
Style.
Style. Yeah, there we go.
I mean,
there
I
we go.
Just,
we've all been there.
I don't
sports
care.
Itself lends itself to debates where they're heated debates. It doesn't matter if you're an analytical person, someone who hates analytics. You're always going to be like, you're an idiot. Here's how it is my way. And that's just what social media has made sports debates, right? On the one hand, you get access to all of these cool new ideas. On the other hand, you have people calling you an idiot all the time. So, I don't know. Y'all be nicer. Okay. Let's see what else we have here. Quickly, we have some sound right here. The 76ers are the Browns of the NBA.
According to Charles Barkley on Inside the NBA.
Oh, let me just go ahead and vent now. You know, I picked the Sixers to get to the finals. I think they are the softest, mentally weakest team that had a bunch of talent. They are the Cleveland Browns of the NBA.
Damn.
They got a lot of talent.
The Browns?
And they talk the talk, and that's it.
I was earlier defending the Bengals. Who brought the Bengals into a debate? Who was it?
Gosh, it was Chris, it was remember? A 49er. It was a call from we were listening to
the
49er fans. This montage.
We were like, what did the Bengals do? I won't defend the Browns here. I think that's fair. Let's see. Jessica Mendoza has signed a multi-year extension with ESPN and will become the first woman to serve as solo analyst on MLB broadcast. The other side of this means that she has also resigned as Mets advisor and will no longer be on Sunday Night Baseball. There's a bit of controversy there when in her role as Mets advisor, she was defending the Mets and said some controversial things. So people were saying, hey, it's a little tricky to be an analyst when you also have this kind of conflict of opinion. But she is on to another venture with
ESPN.
We're
not the Cincinnati Bengals, man. We're the 49ers.
Come on. The Bengals didn't do anything. The Bengals didn't do anything to you, all right? Jeez.
Nothing to do with this.
You make yourself feel better as a 49er. I want to end on this one. I love this text from the 425. Take that back, Stacey. You're the smartest person. Nice, on the other hand.
That's fair. I'm not very nice at all. That's fine. I'm okay with it. We got Michael Bumpus next.